This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. Today, I'm hosting a good friend of mine. We know each other for a while, and I have a very high respect for him, and he's one of the best experts I know in data analytics, AI, just name it. So, Mohan, welcome to the show.
Armon, such a pleasure to be on. We've known each other for a long time now, so cool to be doing this one.
No, thank you very much for joining me. So tell us a little bit about yourself, about the company that you are working with now and you co-founded, and maybe we should start from there.
Yeah, you know, I'm based in Northern Virginia in the Washington, D.C. area. For the last 25 years, I've been building software products across different verticals, financial technology, fintech, EdTech, GPS, mobile resource management, various verticals. I started out as an R&D engineer at 9X Science and Technology, which was an offshoot of Bell Labs, and then joined Deloitte Management Consulting. And after that, I've been a product guy, building products, CTO, CPO for a long time.
Fantastic. And tell us about the company.
Yes, KnownWell. We are at KnownWell.com. We are an AI platform for commercial intelligence for professional services companies. We found an area with professional services. Traditionally, PS companies don't use many enterprise systems, right? So they may use Salesforce, they might have some kind of marketing automation. Otherwise, PS companies are mostly run on gut feel, right? So we found an opportunity to build this product for commercial intelligence. And what we mean by commercial intelligence here is a combination of multiple things, market intelligence, revenue intelligence. But where we are starting out is around client intelligence, engagement intelligence, and coming up with ways to score portfolio health, make smarter decisions about client retention, client growth opportunities, so on and so forth. So we're building a product for professional services companies.
Okay, and then what KnownWell is doing is really a kind of AI-first approach, I believe, right? So you guys really started with AI in mind and building a whole product around that concept. One of the topics that we discussed was that, the SaaS kind of product and the SaaS era versus AI era, or building SaaS applications versus AI applications. Can you a little bit expand upon that?
Yeah, sounds good. You know, we've all built SaaS applications for a long time. And as you know, building SaaS applications, not easy. So I'll say that when I contrasted, there already was several challenges in terms of finding good product market fit with SaaS companies. But nevertheless, it was a linear process. There was a product manager, or initially it was the founder of the company, who would say, here is the problem we want to solve. A designer would come in and say, here is how I envision the UI to look. and then there would be software developers who would build it. So it was a fairly linear process. It was a predictable process. The outcome might not have been predictable, but at least the process to produce the product was predictable. So you went from A to B to C. But what happens with AI native products? And when I say AI native, you're talking about data and algorithms and LLMs being the core part of your application, right? So that is literally 70-80% of your application, and then everything else just surrounds it. And that's what I mean by AI native, as opposed to a bolt-on that you might do saying, hey, I'm going to add chat to my SaaS product, or I might use an ML model to my SaaS product. That is more bolt-on. So here you're imagining the product as an AI native, and also the UX is completely thought through from a ground-up perspective. What happens in an AI product, Arman, as you also know, that there is uncertainty and the output is chaotic, meaning the same question might produce different outputs, right, at different times. Or the same question asked slightly differently might produce different outcomes. It's just the nature of how LLMs work. And so there is, ultimately, these systems are prediction machines, and there is uncertainty. So therefore, you have to compensate in how you build the product to accommodate this uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So you're right. So from your definition is, you would define SaaS applications in a traditional manner when maybe AI or maybe even, you know, all of those capabilities are more a feature. But if it's a foundation for the application and the application is built around MML, LLM, and then the large language model and everything, then in that case, you are really defining that as a kind of AI first product application. And you are really trying to perfect that kind of learning training process that for your data and model. And then when you have a trained model, then that's the value, not necessarily the code that you are writing in your application.
That's right. I mean, it is really using the output of the LLM as the central piece around which you have built the product. So it's sort of a very different approach from the way we've done traditional SaaS. Some of the implications as we are building a product like this is, how do you elicit user feedback when you know the output itself is unpredictable, right? So you have to have some ways of passively eliciting feedback. Mm-hmm. You know, and Google Search has done this for a long time, so it is not new, but it is new in SaaS. For example, in search products, you know, if they didn't click on anything on page one, but they went to page two. Mm-hmm. That itself gives you an indication at scale that there is some user feedback just from the actions. So eliciting user feedback in a passive manner is important. Secondly, when you build it, you have to have some hypothesis on what are the most likely answers that are going to come out, and design for it. So that is going to be another. It's going to be more or less like a hypothesis-based software development, that here are the most likely answers that are going to come out. And for each of these situations, here is how I'm going to handle it. So that is another approach that is critical. But the most important thing that we found was to couple this with more of a deterministic system. So what we do is we add a rubric on top of the LLM output that makes it more deterministic in its output. So on top of it, there is a layer we've built. For example, we have defined a client health based on three categories, Arman. One is around what is the perception of delivery quality? Like, how am I doing? Not just how I think I'm doing, how the client is perceiving that I'm doing, right? So that's a category. The second category is around what is the relationship strength, because services are a relationship business. So what is the relationship strength? And third is there a good commercial engagement alignment between the services that I'm offering and what they've bought, right? So we've put a model on top of the LLM output that makes it more predictable in its nature. So it makes it easier to consume. And the last thing I would say here is it's really important to be honest with the users and say that how this is going to work. And ultimately, we are making predictions, and hopefully the reward in using these types of products is more than the risk of using these products, meaning occasionally there might be a false positive, in which case you have to deal with it, right? So, and just being honest with the users is going to be really important.
Interesting. And of course, you know, at the end of the day, it goes back to the data, right? So you need some volume of data depending on, you know, which domain you are working with, but also you need quality data that, you know, you can aim for. Some domains, including this one, I wonder how do you really, you know, how do you plan to really get access to the quality data? Is it just the data coming from that particular service firm that is shared, or do you benchmark maybe, you know, some of the data out of everybody's data, or build the, you know, the model there, or there are some other third parties and outside this domain that can help you to build really the model you want?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. So the way KnownWell works, Arman, is we are taking what's called all of the natural information flows. So email, calendar, Zoom transcripts, Slack messages, if they make phone calls, those transcripts. So all the human-to-human communications that are happening in one form or the other, and it's a very information rich from a human to human perspective. That's what services are. They have weekly status meetings. They may have daily stand-ups. They may have, there's so much information there, which makes it really suitable to run it through an LLM, just because there is so much natural communications. And then we couple that with structured data they may have. For example, help desk tickets, their CRM, so on and so forth. So we couple all of that together. So that's how we are getting the rich information. And to the question that you asked, we obviously have domain expertise within the company with having run services companies before. And we have built a model that essentially think of it as you know, the three categories that I mentioned earlier, and that further broken down and giving it the right weight. So there is a KnownWell model. On top of it, we have an industry sector model. You may be in marketing services, which is slightly different from technology services, which may be different from finance services. And then the last 5 to 10% is around customer specific, right? Our customer specific that we will have to tune in different ways. So we have a three-stage layer between the KnownWell model, the industry sector model that we built, and then the customer specific model. And that's how we are able to make these predictions in terms of where the retention issues are and where the growth opportunities are.
So as you mentioned, and as I know, you have been, you know, in a number of different type of business in the past that you have experienced around software businesses, different software businesses, and now you are involved in a AI kind of first application building business that, you know, that's the core part of what your offering is. How do you see from business perspective AI can impact, for example, in this case, if you detach yourself from the product you guys are building and just look at the business, is there any difference building this business versus building other businesses that they are offering a software product?
In terms of how the teams are constructed, they are slightly different, right? So, everybody thinks AI in their own ways, but one of the lessons for me is just organizing the data, moving the data through the pipeline, and getting the data in certain shape and form for the AI layer is a lot of work. So the central part, if you see our system architecture or product architecture, it is a very data heavy pipeline, right? So, which was not the case previously. Previously, we would think of it more as a, like a traditional SaaS architecture. Here is my database. Here is my application logic. Here is my UI tier. So we would organize it in a vertical fashion that way. But now most of the effort has gone into organizing the data pipeline, right? So that is a huge difference in terms of how the team itself comes together. The UI side of it is very interesting also, Arman, because in the past we had a very UX heavy, like a visual UI heavy UX. But now we have been going more and more into what we call the ambient UX. And the concept of ambient UX is there is this product, our product, running continually in the background. And this product is doing things for you, like almost like a chief of staff of in your company. That is the persona that we've built. But a chief of staff not necessarily is the face of the company. It's not the main UI. Right? So the UX concepts around ambient UX, we've had to rethink that quite a bit as well. So from a product and engineering team organization, it looks different. But of course, how the software engineers develop the software seems to have completely changed from previous experiences. It's these co-pilots produce so much of the work, right? So we have a it is amazing what the co-pilots can do. Similarly, within our marketing team, marketing co-pilots are doing so much of the work. So the way we've organized the company also is different from previous experiences.
Interesting. So let's say there is a service firm that utilizes the technology that you are developing, versus there are some other service firms that they are not. They are just traditionally doing what they do. What would be the difference between these two organizations?
Yeah. Thanks for asking that. So if you think about services companies itself, right, it is a barbell. There are many, many, many companies that are small. They grow up to $10, $20, $30 million. And stop there, right? And then there is nothing in the middle or very few companies in the middle. And then there are the giants, Accenture, Deloitte, and others, or even other technology companies that are big. There is nothing in the middle. And you have to ask yourself, why is that the case? It is because scaling a professional services is very, 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 very difficult. Because it has always been the case, no matter what the model, what the business model, increase in headcount was necessary for a linear relationship in terms of revenues, right? That was like one problem in terms of scaling. Obviously, it is hard to scale with people. The second is, how do you keep all of these relationships together is very hard. So the companies that have scaled and that are on the right side of the barbell usually have a partner model, right? I'm a partner. I work at McKinsey or Accenture or wherever. I have my a couple of dozen maybe clients, and that's what I keep in my head. And then I have a team under me that helps me run those projects and successfully deliver for them. But you cannot do that in every sector, whether it's marketing agencies or any of these, because a partner model is very expensive. So you can grow up to some point, right? There's a founder, she or he grows it up to some point, maybe brings in another one or two partners, like a VP of client services, but it just stops at some point. So these are the two fundamental problems. So the way we are attempting to solve this is, how do you scale relationships? That's question number one. How do you get the siloed operations at scale out? So traditionally what happens is, as you're trying to scale the services company, the delivery organization and the client services organization don't talk much. And it goes, it comes apart. So how can you de-silo the operations using AI? And then how do you take management by gut feel? Because it's a relationship business. An account manager tells somebody who tells somebody who then tells the COO of the company that, hey, this client is in trouble. And it may be 6 weeks by the time that telephone game happens. Like, how do you short circuit that? And the third problem that companies have is the wild swings between growth and profitability. Right? You can grow, you become less profitable as a percentage. Then you focus on profit, your growth comes down. Right? So these swings that happen in a services company are tremendous. And so our idea is around, let's build a product where you know where there are retention risks right up and down the chain immediately, so you can do something about it, where point out growth opportunities, and make everybody work as a team and try to de-silo the operations. So that is going to be the big difference between a company using KnownWell and not using KnownWell. We will also promote another thing, which is around productizing services, because we mainly focus on professional services companies, Arman, that deal with what we call execution-oriented services. So we don't want to deal with audit, tax advice, strategy consulting, because these are the types of companies that are very bespoke, right? So every engagement is different. Now, if you can work with companies where the repeatability is high, and you use our technology as the enterprise platform, and they are on a journey to productize their services, I think that is going to be the winning formula for the future in professional services.
And you mentioned a very good point that essentially by using KnownWell is more like you are even creating some virtual, I would say, personnel that otherwise would not have existed, right? So ultimately your software can, you know, create a chief of a staff person that virtually exists, and that person really, you know, act like that kind of person and take some responsibilities. Of course, you start probably, you know, with a fraction of those responsibilities, and as your, you know, model is well trained and your AI algorithms are getting better, you expand. But ultimately, your idea is, I'm going to really create such different roles in the organization as needed in order to bring the efficiency and also help you scale better. And this is not necessarily about really me creating some forms and UI and building more capability into the software. It is more about the kind of actions that you see out of the system that otherwise would not have happened, and overall improves the performance of the overall organization in a very smart way.
That's exactly right. That's really well said. The way we think of it, Arman, is everybody in the company should have a chief of staff, but this is a digital chief of staff. You can be an account manager, and an account manager chief of staff you know, instead of spending maybe 90 minutes in the morning collecting all the information of all the projects and all the clients that you deal with, there is a nice package created for you. The ambient UX concepts that I mentioned are very important, where things are happening in the background on your behalf. And I'm very excited with AI agents and agentic architecture, where you can be on a spectrum of initially maybe the chief of staff is helping, provide information to you. At some point, it could help you make better decisions. Beyond that, it can maybe do some of the work for you, right? So meaning, hey, there is an email that I need to send, and I'm going to send it on your behalf, right? So because I know, because, you know, if a client complains, the first thing you have to do is, I'm going to look at it, and I will get back to you, right? So be able to automate certain actions for you. As a technology, as a CTO, I'm very interested in the concepts of ambient UX and agentic AI, and see how these can work together to shape the platform further.
There is a little bit of danger in automation when we automate too fast, right? So in that case, it can backlash a little bit. And some organizations may see that, no, I don't want to really go that fast. And I wanted to really go step by step and see the impact and everything works well and then go to the next step. Forgetting about known well here and just wearing the hat of being kind of expert in AI in general, not talking about a particular product or company. Do you think that in general, we are at the stage that may be too excited about these technologies that we didn't know about 2 or 3 years ago, and all of a sudden now we are seeing a lot of potentials for it, and we are going too fast, and then we may get to the point that maybe the automation needed to slow down a little bit and then go step by step, and maybe we should have taken more measured steps? Or you think, no, actually, everything is at the right pace as long as you can see, and we are actually going a little bit slower than we should because not every company is ready to adopt at this point, and automatically and organically that slowness exists. We don't need to slow it down further. We are at the right pace and everything from your perspective is fine, and the organizations are at the right pace to adopt these new automations and intelligence that they need to insert and include into their daily processing?
Yeah, it's such a good question, Arman. I think it is more of there is going to be a mismatch between not just the promise of this technology, but the real possibilities with this technology and the ability of the human to consume it. There is a mismatch, and it is going to slow down. And we have to look for not slow down as in slow down the pace of technology, but figure out how to get work around it. I'll explain it like this, right? So if you objectively look at where things are, there is no question that AI in general is an efficiency play. It cuts down on task time, especially for knowledge workers, right? So if you're a software engineer, and if you're not using a copilot, your favorite copilot, why wouldn't you do it? It's make you at least 2x more productive, if not more, right? So there is an efficiency. I would also say there is an effectiveness quotient here, right? The quality of your work is going to be higher, right? When I write a blog, my blogs are much better because I've run it through an LLM because, I've written something and I ask it for feedback, right? So it becomes better. I think it is really true that the silos can be eliminated in a company. So here are all of the positive things. Even the research says that the users like using AI tools, meaning that there is an emotional impact that is positive. But here is the rub. I think there is going to be increasingly, and there was a recent HBR article from Karim Lakhani and others about cognitive dissonance of using these AI tools, right? One, people feel like they are cheating, right? So they don't feel good about this because, you know, we've been trained to think that more effort means better product. So in the end, right? So we, there is also research to say, my emotionally, I might be feeling that, hey, I have been an expert in this area, and how can this be more reliable than me? Right? So I think there is going to be a dissonance around using these products, and the adoption is going to slow down, except in like 3 or 4 areas that we know. Well, marketing will use it, software development is using it, support seems to be another area that's taken off. But the general enterprise adoption is going to slow down. And the answer there is not to slow down the pace of technology, I think, but is really to do good change management and good communications. And essentially for leaders to say, it doesn't matter whether you do it or a tool has done it for you, you get all the credit, right? So leadership has to provide that angle and reinforce it over and over again and communicate well. But in the ensuing period, I think your question is right on, that there is going to be a slowdown in adoption and in mass adoption. There'll be early adopters who will run with it. It could even get into stage 2 of the cycle. But then I think for mass acceptance, there is a while to go before it gets there. At least that's my theory.
I would like to ask you, as my last question, it has been a great discussion. Again, thanks for joining us. I would love to ask you for sharing with us one of the books that you liked or some books that you like professionally or personally.
Yeah. You know, let me go with a professional book that I refer to all the time. And it's been something that I've used for a very long time. It's an old book. It's called Playing to Win by Laffley and Martin. And what I love about this book is, you know, the subtitle of the book is How Strategy Really Works, right? So people really get confused by what strategy is. Some people think of strategy as a plan. Some people think of it as a vision, so on and so forth. But the way this book and the authors describe strategy as an integrated set of 5 questions. And if I have time, let me just read out these 5 questions. And every part of the company, starting from the board and the CEO to everybody in the organization, should ask and answer these questions. Question 1 is, what is our winning aspiration? Question 2 is, where will we play? Like, what is our arena? Like in our case, we've decided that it's professional services. Even though, and that was very a specific type of professional services, even though our technology is applicable for everybody. Question 3 is, how will we win? Question 4 is, what capabilities must be in place? And question 5 is, what management systems are required? So I love this book because it takes strategy and makes it so practical by asking these 5 questions. So I would highlight this book.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for sharing with us, not just the book, but also giving us a little bit more. And no, that's fantastic. The way you look at it by very particular, well-defined questions, I think that's brilliant. Great. Thank you very much, Mon, and wish you all the best.
Thank you, Arman. It's been such a pleasure, and you know, known you for a long time, and I respect you so much. So this is such a privilege to do this podcast with you.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Arman Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to saasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.